Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This show is brought to you by Prize Picks. Prize Picks is a revolutionary new daily fantasy game whereby you pick two, three, or four players to go over or under their fantasy point projections, and if you're correct, you win. Pick two or more players from the same sport or league, or go cross leagues for your parlay. Use the promo code 5, that's F-I-V-E, 5, and receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. But first, sign up at prizepicks.com to start winning today. It's football season, and it's time to make your way over to MyBookie. They've got deposit matches, free bets, and huge cash prize contests for you to take advantage of all season long. NFL action? Check. College ball? Check. Plus, they have a mobile-friendly website and top-of-the-line customer service, making their platform a one-stop shop for all betting needs. MyBookie offers action on everything from championship futures to NFL in-game live betting, making sure you've covered every step of the way. Sign up at MyBookie today, and when you do, use promo code 3YARDS to claim a halfway match on your deposit. If you put in $200, they'll spot you another $100 to play with. That's promo code 3YARDS so you can claim your bonus when you make your deposit. Sign up today to begin your winning season exclusively at MyBookie.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
Miami has
the
Dolphins.
And we're on, and welcome to another edition, a victorious edition, a streaking edition. That's five in a row, people, of 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Alfredo Arteaga. Simon Clancy is here. Chris Kaufman is here. And we're going to start with this. It's rare. And I know the fans love to say, we this, we that, we won, we lost, we need to go get this wide receiver. But this is, and trust me, it's not we. They play, you are fans. But this, what happened on Sunday, is one of those instances where we feel as if we could have been responsible for putting more points on the board, because the score was 14-0. And then something happened. What happened, Simon, and how could we have prevented what happened?
I know that there are members of the Miami Dolphins who have listened to this podcast. Mike Gesicki, if you're listening, how are you doing, dude? Now, Ted Karras, if he listened to this podcast, he would have been able to get his Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0, because he needed it, not only to shave the hair on his arms, sort of sweat dripping onto the fucking ball that he snapped into two of his fucking feet, but also, as he snapped it between his legs, the hair on his balls was hanging between his legs so long that it was like a horse jumping a fence and getting caught on the brush. The ball deflected off his hairy bollocks and hit the floor. Fumbled, they returned it, going up 21-0, turns to 14-7, all because Ted Karras didn't shave his genitalia properly. That's pretty much what happened. I mean, that's pretty much what happened. I couldn't
use the ball deodorant and ball toner at least.
Well, if he'd used
ball toner, moisture control,
it would have slid off his nuts and straight into his hands. As it happened, off the hair, ball's on the floor, picked up, returned 60 yards, 21-0 becomes 14-7. We're actually in a ball game. So, Ted, 5RSN is your code, buddy. For a Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0, or a landscape if you want to. But I'd go for a Manscaped.
Well, at this point, it might be landscaping for old Ted.
Yeah, it could be landscaping that manscaping if he needs it, because he's of a certain vintage, is Ted. So, yeah, but that's what he should have done. Fortunately, it paid off in the end, so we're all right.
Yeah, Ted Karras in the post-game press conference says that it was moisture control, and and he said it with a straight face. Yeah. I don't think he was joking. So yeah, you know, I would really recommend the ball deodorant. Okay, And then freshen up into a halftime, okay? Because we can't afford it. That was two bad snaps in that game, by the way. So, all right, moving on.
Costly.
Yes, the team is streaking.
Tim Ruddy would have gotten the Manscaped package.
I don't know, man. Do you remember what Tim Ruddy used to look like? Did that look like a man that shaved his balls?
He was a hairy motherfucker.
He did not shave his testicle area.
There was like zero chance, right?
If he did, he used a strimmer, an industrial strength one.
Yes.
Yeah. He had one of those old-fashioned lawnmowers that, like, you know, isn't even gas-powered or anything like that. You just push. You had a push mower.
If you were Tim Ruddy's neighbor on a Sunday morning and you heard a... you were never sure if he was mowing his lawn or cutting his testicles. And I'll just leave that there.
Yeah, Tim Ruddy used to... He would have to use, like, kerosene in a match or something like
OJ that. OJ McDuffie probably needs to ask that question on the Fish Tank podcast, one of our other network podcasts.
I think it's worthy. It's
definitely a worthy question. I might message out.
I think the fans want to know.
Absolutely.
It's the most important... I know in the past we've done a little jumping around and finding out what players that used to play for the Dolphins do, policemen, majorettes, whatever, but Tim Ruddy and his testicles. Tim's testicles sounds like a...
My fear, always when we used to do that, was that we would find out that a guy was dead. And I believe that our streak is still alive. We've never found a guy that was dead, right?
I don't think so.
Might do it later on. I might ask. I'll spend most of the podcast, and we'll have. And Chris, that's your homework assignment for the rest of the podcast, too. Try to think of a really obscure Dolphin player. Okay.
Someone that died? That's a little morbid.
No, not that died. A really obscure Dolphin player. And Simon will play Where Are They Now with us.
Let's have a let's have a competition to find the most obscure Dolphin player you can think of between now and the end of the show.
Did we do Otis Leverett yet?
Yeah. Between when and when though, Alf? When are the
Let's go modern era. True. So Marino 2000s? On forward.
Okay.
Marino on forward. Let's go.
Marino 90s forward.
Yeah, Marino 90s forward. How about that? Marino
90s. Between 1990 and 2020, for the last 30 years, pick the most random Dolphin. He had to have made a 53, not just in a training camp.
Mm-hmm.
What about, is Jarris McPhail random enough?
I mean, he is not random at all.
He's not that obscure. What about Nate Jacquet?
Yeah, more than Jarris McPhail.
Good old Nate Jacquet. Wow.
Because we can go there. Amari Lowe.
Amari Lowe. Wow.
Don't play the game now.
Okay. All right. I'll save him because I can just keep going.
All right. The Dolphins, as I mentioned on
the already got a winner, by the way. I've already got a winner, so might as well stop the fucking game now.
You fucked it 30 seconds in. Like, yeah.
I've already found a guy I've never, ever, ever, ever heard of, and he made a roster at a time when I was even bigger Dolphins fan than I am now, because I literally just sit in my bedroom, wank myself off, and listen to the Armed Forces radio to try and catch what the Dolphins were doing. So I've already won this. So you guys can find whoever the fuck you like. Just so you know, this game is over.
Well, I was gonna try to get a guy that people actually have heard of before, but is pretty obscure. Like, for example, Charles Jordan. Remember him? How fast he was?
Of course.
This guy, I mean, this guy shits all over Charles Jordan. This guy shits over Michael.
Or, you know, a pretty effective defensive tackle in Shane Burton. Remember him?
Yep. Again, this guy.
Of course, he had all kinds of knockdown passes.
This guy takes.
That's all
Shane
he used to
Burn.
Do. He used to knock down passes at the line.
And the original 5'7". Oh, he was not the original. The original one was Mark Higgs. But after him came Irving Spikes. Remember him?
Yep. This guy would take Brian Sochet and smack you in the face with him for Irving Spikes.
Oof.
I mean, boy.
This guy is the most obscure player I've ever heard of.
All right. Well,
is it a really good name too?
It's mate. The name is fantastic. It makes it even better, and it's the thing that It's the thing now that made me notice it more than anything. Don't look now, because I've won this game.
You've got you've got me excited. You've got me excited now.
It's not Aubrey Beavers, is it?
No, mate. Aubrey Beavers was a third round pick out of Oklahoma. This is a guy who,
I mean, because we've already done. To be fair, we've already done Rolly Lombala.
Yeah, well, this guy makes Rolly Lombala look like Dan Marino. I'm now going to Google what's happened to him.
Oh boy. Well, let's move on until we don't move on. And I said on the 3 yards per carry account, I posted the Dolphins have given the Jaguars, 49ers, Rams, and the Chargers their worst losses of the season. And they shut out the Jets. And had they kicked another field goal against the Jets, it would have been five teams that they would have handed their worst loss of the season. I came away extremely impressed with how they beat the San Diego Chargers. Like I said in the preview show, if you take away the fourth quarter, and I know that that's asking a lot, okay, but had you done that, the Chargers were the clear-cut best team in the NFL because they had blown, of course, four leads of 16 or more. So how impressed were you, or were you not impressed, Simon, with that win on Sunday?
I was hugely impressed. Like I said in the previous show, I think the Chargers are a good football team. A lot of really good players. I just think they're really badly coached. And I thought that showed up in spades on Sunday, frankly. But the flip side of that is that I believe that the Dolphins are incredibly well coached. One of the top three coaching jobs in the NFL across the board, not just Flores. And I thought that showed up in spades as well, given, you know, the Dolphins coaching staff understands situational football, I think, as well as any coaching staff in the NFL. Bill Belichick is fantastic at it. I think Ron Rivera is a really good situational coach. Sean Payton's a very good. But Brian Flores and his coaching team are coaching out their skins, especially when you consider that, what, four or five coaches weren't even playing, and not just, you know, assistants. This was, you know, I think Marion Hobby was down. You know, there were decent level guys not on the sidelines.
Yeah, Austin Clark, yesterday. The outside Austin linebackers Clark. Coach, was gone. Yeah,
the quarterback coach again for the
quarterback
second,
coach
for the second of two or three starts. So I thought overall, I thought we played really well. We just win in those areas. Special teams is fantastic from top to bottom. It's a great special teams unit. I know Jason had the missed kick, but Matt Hawk's a great punter. Matt Collins is a fantastic special teams player. The coverage units are great. I thought Jakeem Grant had arguably his best game as all round as a Dolphin, actually, yesterday. But overall, I just thought they played really well. And I thought the thing that impressed me the most, you know, there were some throws from Tua that I thought were great. I thought Savion Ahmed played really well. I thought Austin Jackson played extremely well. The thing that impressed me most was the way that Josh Boyer mixed up what he did. You know, because we were all talking about, oh, cover zero blitz, going to send the house. Well, what he did was not actually do that a great deal at all. He sent probably five men quite a lot, but you didn't see nearly as many of those cover zero blitzes. What he did was flood the field with defensive backs and confuse the hell out of Justin Herbert, because we were just running so many looks. Sometimes it was zone, sometimes it was man, sometimes, you know, and also you look at the snap counts. I thought it was fascinating that the ability where you rarely see Baker and Carl Van Noy come off the field at all. I think they both played 37, 38 snaps. I think Landon Roberts played 37, 38 snaps. They all pretty much played the same number. Whereas Byron Jones, Brandon Jones, you know, the secondary, which is performing at an outstanding level. I mean, these are not mug receivers. This is Keenan Allen, all pro, second or third best route runner in the NFL. This is Mike Williams.
And Mikey Williams is pretty good.
And Guyton. And Guyton's been off to a good start.
Guyton has got wheels. Hunter Henry is a good tight end.
Yes. And Kellen Ballage is the best pass receiving running back in the NFL.
But Ballage played well. But I mean, I thought the secondary just absolutely obliterated a really good receiving core. I mean,
yes, they did.
Can you think of Keenan Allen had one catch towards the end of the game where he picked up some. I can't think of another moment where he had any sort of impact in the game.
No, Mike Williams was essentially useless until he got a couple of garbage catches. And they did something interesting, because I dug into it a little bit, and they basically trusted Xavier Howard and told him, you know, go erase Mike Williams, and we're going to really pay a lot of attention to Keenan Allen on third downs. And I think that Justin Herbert just didn't know what to do with himself on third down, because he didn't security blanket.
Nick Needham played well as well, I thought.
Yes, he did.
I thought that was
one of the best games. He deserves a pretty big shout.
Yeah, Noah Igbinoghene didn't play a single snap on defense, which I thought was interesting. I thought Brandon Jones is beginning to.
I believe he did.
I don't have my glasses at the moment, so I didn't think I saw him have a single snap on defense in the what I looked at the numbers, but maybe I was wrong.
Oh,
but okay. I thought McCain played well. I thought Brandon Jones played well. And Eric Rowe continues to just be one of the most underrated free agent signings that we've made in a decade, frankly, just in terms of his organizational skills and where he is on the field and just what he brings to the party. I think I thought it was a really, really strong Dolphins performance. And we're not 6-3 by default or by accident. We're 6-3 because we're a decent football team that's being coached absolutely brilliantly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess I'll ask you the same thing, Chris. Were you impressed? But I'll also ask you this. Can you get Raekwon Davis's snap count in that game? Because at the end of the game, he just couldn't go anymore. I don't know if you saw him, but he was asking out because he was short of breath. Because I believe they overplayed him a bit. I don't know if the snap count is going to
That's concerning because he only had 36 snaps. That's not
well,
that,
he was
that's
asking
not,
out.
That's not
he
a
was
heavy asking, day.
Well, he was asking out. Do you think maybe he was injured or something? Because he was asking out every other play to the point where they just said, all right, just stay here in the final drive.
Well, I don't know, but he was having a very good day. And so he probably was getting a little winded from taking on all those double teams because he was playing nose tackle and he was standing up to the double teams, and 36 snaps is a lot to ask a guy to do that on the inside.
It's a surprisingly
tough ask. I think, you know, if you look at a guy like Zach Sealer, he played like 52 snaps and, you know, that's one of the things that makes him unique is his ability to play so many snaps, even though he's sort of an inside guy. You know, Christian Wilkins has that ability as well. But he was drafted first round, you know, Zach Sealer, we picked up off the practice squad of the Baltimore Ravens toward the end of last year. And congratulations to him, by the way, for signing an extension today to keep him in Miami through 2023, because that's a huge extension for Chris Greer and the Dolphins. Very well deserved, very well earned.
Absolutely.
He's been from snap one in his first game against the New York Giants toward the end of last year. You could tell that you just found something. He's continued that. He is a starter on this defensive line, and he will remain a starter. Like, he's not somebody you even want to replace or you want to like better deal by trying to get a first rounder or something like that. He's a legit player. Anyway, I think that asking Raekwon to jump up in snap count and take on those doubles all day on the interior with high energy and high effort, it's not surprising he got tired the first time out. Surprising, but you know, overall, the snap counts, you're right, Simon. Noah did not play. I was thinking of somebody else. He didn't play any snaps in this game. But yeah, the what they did against them is they flooded the field with, as you said, they flooded the field with defensive backs. I did a tweet storm on this last night. I think on average, Justin Herbert saw 6 defensive backs every pass, every time he dropped back, you know, which is incredible that the average defense that he saw was a dime defense. You know, it wasn't that way on the running play. So the Dolphins were clearly doing a good job gaming the run pass tendencies. So the Dolphins started using this amoeba defense, and that's where you saw the defensive backs, I think, probably more explicitly in use. You know, they're swarming around in the front seven, nobody with their hand down, or maybe only one player with his hand down, making it difficult for the offensive line to identify who's coming and who's not coming. But the reason that worked is because they had so many defensive backs on the field. They have such higher maneuverability, higher mobility, they can get back out into legit coverage or zone coverage from their disguise points where they're disguising or trying to fake a blitz or do everything that they were doing before the snap. So I think using 6 defensive backs on average for every pass play was a big, big thing for this defense. It was a big part of their effectiveness and how they shut down Justin Herbert. And it's actually very refreshing, because how many times did we really bitch about the previous defensive coordinators before Brian Flores got here, and how we wouldn't use dime defense and, you know, stuff like that. But it certainly worked in this game. It was a really impressive defensive effort to watch and see them, you know, just disguising their coverage constantly and also switching between man and zone like every play. And sometimes Justin Herbert got it, to his credit. But a lot of times he didn't. He saw players backing out into 7 and 8 man coverages. And just, you know, there was hesitation there. You know, he didn't know what to do with the football. He had probably his worst game of the year.
Easily his worst game of the year. Because he didn't have his other bad game was really kind of debatable, because they were in it until he took them out of it, which was against Denver when he threw the 2 picks in the second half.
Right.
So
I mean, this was his worst game of the year. And they didn't do it. I thought they might do it by kind of playing a little bit more suffocating, you know, just by having everybody back and forcing him to stay patient, and then just start, you know, slowly raising the temperature by identifying tendencies and stuff like that, and do like what Xavien Howard did and jump that ball. You know, but the Dolphins didn't do that. They really dictated on their own by disguising everything and just being a really tricky defense. And so I thought that they stayed true to their identity, or the identity that they were establishing, and they did it their way. And so it was, you know, admirable.
Yeah. Simon, when this season started, and yeah, I think the defense was absolutely, like, this was the first time all year that I could say on the defensive side, yeah, they can do it all. Like, they could play zone. They could bring zero blitzes. They could bring nickel blitzes. They could play all kinds of defenses and be successful. But one part of this team that has been up and down, to say the least, and they released Jordan Howard today, is that running game. And I think that when this season started, nobody would have said, yeah, by week 10, Savon Ahmed would be the bell cow back. And he got almost every carry save for a couple for Patrick Laird and two for DeAndre Washington at the end. What do you make of Savon Ahmed, Simon, and is the running game essentially fixed? I know fix is a strong word to use, but is it good enough right now?
No, I don't think it is. I don't think it's fixed at all. I think what we found is some nice pieces. You know, Ahmed looks a decent player. He's got burst, which is something that you don't see any of the Dolphins. Breida has burst, obviously. But it's nice that I think you're putting together a collection of players. Like, you know, Patrick Laird never lets this team down. You know, Patrick Laird, you saw him picking up in pass protection. You saw him pick up a big first down. He's got good hands. He's a great special teamer. You know, he's the kind of guy that, you know, he's a poor man's Rex Burkhead in a way. I know that's cheesy because he's white, but it's kind of true. Breida offers something different. And I know that we feel has been slightly underused this season, given his ability out of the backfield, given his hands, given his speed. Gaskin has got those moves. He can, you know, he can cut very quickly, small and, you know, low center of gravity, jitterbug type. And Ahmed has got the speed. He's got that, you know, he's got some jitterbug about him because he's smaller. But what they really do lack is a number one back. You know, I think they thought that was going to be Jordan Howard, but he, you know, clearly didn't work out, and he was released today, as you mentioned. I still think they're a running back short. There's a lot of players in the draft. You know, I was going through the running back class over the weekend. You know, does Travis Etienne, you know, people always say Travis Etienne, does Travis Etienne fit this, what we're looking for? Is he too similar potentially to the sorts of guys that we have? He's only 203 pounds. He's got to fix that fumbling problem. Mm. You know, there's some other backs now starting to come through. You know, Najee Harris has some serious familiarity with Tua. And one thing I've been certainly talking about in the magazine over here, but I saw Chris say about it the other day, and I think he said it in our WhatsApp group as well, is that this year more than any year, I wrote a piece about it, this year more than any year, you've got to rely on players that you know. Don't overthink it in the draft. Draft good college players. Do not reach for, you know, high-end potential, because potential more than any other year will bite you in the ass if you get it wrong. Harris is just a really good football player. The Williams kid at North Carolina, big, fast, powerful. You know, I think they're lacking a number one. I thought Ahmed played very well, and he deserved to you know, to continue to carry the ball through the game. I don't think they found a guy, and I don't think the running game is fixed. But there are, you know, little sparks that that I keep seeing, and it was good to see him get some playing time because I liked him in Washington.
Yeah, I think the Dolphins, as far as the, you know, getting a running back in the draft, I think they showed their hand already this year. They went after Le'Veon Bell, which suggests to me that they're going to try to fix it with money and a free agent contract, because I don't think they were trying to rent Le'Veon Bell for the rest of the year. I think they were trying to trade for him to give him a contract for maybe 2 or 3 years. So maybe they showed their hand already in that regard. What do you make of the running game for at least going forward and for the rest of the year, Chris?
Savannah did a nice job during the game, but what you have to keep in mind is, you know, his good day kind of just boils down to a couple of plays. And I think the thing that they found in particular that worked for them in this game against the Chargers was split zone. And they experimented with some split zone running plays, particularly with Mac Hollins acting as like a tight end. Mm-hmm. And playing, I mean, Mike Gesicki used to play this role all the time in Penn State. I mean, this exact role that they had Mac Hollins doing, except Mac Hollins did it better. And so, you know, this split zone attack, you know, whether it was front side or backside, Savon Ahmed gained good yards on both of those. And then there was another really successful play that was a wildcat play, and it was with Malcolm Perry in the back as the trigger man. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a play you're doing, it's essentially a zone read. And because of the nature of the play, you're freezing a guy and forcing him not to reduce as far inside as he might like to. And that created the hole for Ahmed. I didn't see enough of a, you know, variety of different ways that we were gaining yards on the ground, or that Savon Ahmed was gaining yards on the ground, for me to say something bold like, I think this is starting to get on the right path or something like that. The Dolphins went with a lot of, they must have seen something on tape that they liked, but they really went with a lot of two and especially three tight end personnel on the field. Mm-hmm. And really tight splits, and tried to do some, I guess, power football, and run the ball that way. It didn't work. I didn't think it worked really. I didn't think it was working particularly well in the passing game either, except Tua was, you know, he was just executing really, really well. And so I hope, you know, honestly, I don't want to see that again. I'd rather they play a little bit more with space, and spread the field out and look for lanes. Cause I think that does fit Savon Ahmed's skill set, is when you spread out a little bit more and have them be shifty and pick between lanes. I think it also might fit Matt Breida too. So we'll see when he gets back. But certainly this right now, you'd have to say, I mean, you're saying week 10, Savon Ahmed is our bell cow. Well, yeah, week 11, it's going to be somebody different. You know, week 12, it's going to be somebody different. And we've seen that before. We've seen that with the Patriots. They did that a lot over the years. You know, one week it's this guy, and next week it's this guy. And, you know, it's just really – it's kind of this rotation, and it goes week to week. And I unfortunately think that's going to continue. And we'll just have to see what kind of running attacks they decide are going to work every week.
It speaks to that thing about situational football, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Which we praise.
Absolutely.
Which we praise, and you've just mentioned it. We praised the Patriots for long enough about doing it. How many times did Tom Brady come out one week and throw 400 yards and five touchdowns? And then the next week he threw like six balls, and some guy he'd never heard of rushed for 186 yards. And, you know,
yeah,
all of a sudden was never to be heard of again. You know, Damian Harris last night, 127 yards, and he got Jacoby Myers throwing touchdowns. And, you know, it's always been the Patriot way. And I hate to keep saying, oh, everything's Patriot. But, you know, there are elements of, you know, Chandler Cox, you know, was inactive yesterday. Chris Myrick was active, you know, mm-hmm. And I'm sure that was for a situational reason. You know, the Dolphins have used and benefited from an awful lot of two tight ends on almost every down this season in terms of how that offense works. But, you know, I haven't seen that if Myrick got on the field for any offensive snaps, but, you know, there's clearly a reason why Chandler Cox. Yeah. Okay. So there's clearly a reason why Chandler Cox, you know, wasn't playing, because actually he's been effective. He's a good special teams player.
And in the All-22, if there was a guy, and I think Durham Smythe is one of those guys, if there was ever a guy who's, you know, batting damn near 1,000 as far as hitting his assignment, hitting his blocks, it's Chandler Cox. So I never liked seeing Chandler Cox inactive. I never liked to see him on the inactive list, because I think he's useful.
Can I just say, by the way, I found another guy who's not quite as good as the first guy, but he's still a great guy for this search.
And we will be getting to that very, very soon once we wrap this up. All right, one last question here, and we can move on and do our Where Are They Now segment. And I already have my guy, you know, I know who I'm going to ask about. But let's get to brass tacks. We've talked about the defense. We've talked about the running game. How well did Tua Tagovailoa play? And did he outduel Justin Herbert? I think I know the answer to that, and I think we're all going to answer in the affirmative, all three of us. But take it away, Simon.
I don't think it wasn't really a dueling game, was it? I mean,
no.
I thought he played well. I thought he played well within himself. I thought he made a couple of really nice throws. I think pretty much the first throw he made, where he rolled out to his left, had the short underneath to the back, and then just waited that extra second to hit Gesicki. I thought that was a great throw. He got away with a couple, you know, the one that went through Kenneth Murray's hand, for example.
Yes.
You know, but overall, I thought he played well.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but
no, it's all right.
Everybody that's out there saying that should have been picked. Okay. You try to catch that ball 12 yards from the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
With the heat that Tua put on that ball. Okay.
Yeah. That's the great that's point. That's the point catch. That you got to bring up.
If that were Keenan Allen playing running back, I mean, playing linebacker, I would have said, yeah, okay, that should have been intercepted. If that was Julio Jones playing linebacker, sure, it should have been intercepted. That's a linebacker. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Not many linebackers would catch that ball.
Okay. Let me then throw something else at you. If Ryan Fitzpatrick had made that throw, would we have all been saying, oh, he got away with that one?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a fair question.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think so. But at the same time, I do think it's a fair point to bring up that, I mean, because the quarterbacks kind of operate this way too. I mean, they throw past the linebackers, and in some cases, if the linebackers are not in great position, and you know, it didn't seem for a little bit that linebacker was in great position, it would have been a hell of a pickoff if the linebacker had gotten it. But he did. He got away with one. I mean, it was. It's fair, but still, I mean, it wasn't. It's not all near interceptions, as they call them.
No, absolutely.
Not all of them are created equally. And is all. Okay. All I'm saying. And that wasn't triple coverage.
No, I thought he played well. You know, he's doing what it takes to manage games pretty well. The thing is, the Dolphins don't need him to be. To take the team on his shoulders, and you know they're playing so well in the other facets. There's going to come a time, 2, 3, 4, 5 years time, where he's going to be the bell cow carrying this team on his shoulders. At the moment, they don't need him to do that. They need him to play turnover-free football, smart football, not do stupid things with the ball, not do stupid things with his body, throw it away when he's under pressure, not take sacks, not take big hits, keep it accurate. See the game slow down in front of him, and that's exactly what's happening. I think generally Chan Gailey's calling a really nice game, and he's doing really well. The line's protecting him. I think they only had 6 pressures yesterday. Like I said earlier, Austin Jackson, I thought, played really well. You know, pretty much eliminated Melvin Ingram. So yeah, I thought a lot to be excited about, a lot to be thankful for. He's doing well.
Yeah, and if I could nitpick slightly, is just the ball placement on that ball that they played volleyball with early in the game to Gesicki, that could have been out in front of him a little bit more, you know. And I really would have wanted to see him complete that pass to Jakeem right before the half.
Oh yeah. I thought that
it was a
miss.
Foot away.
I thought it was a bit of a miss. I thought he could have.
It was. I mean, he missed it, but I mean, it was like a foot away.
I mean,
if you look at the back view,
Would have been a great play.
Yeah, it would have been. That would have been like if
that would have been second only to the Hopkins Murray play at the end of the year.
Yeah,
it would have been a nice, you know, it would have been nice to finish the half that way. And you know, the Chargers right there, you know, they were ripe to be, you know, to be told, look, you know, you're going to lose, and this time you're not going to be ahead, and you're not going to come back. Like, this quarterback is going to score points on you. You're not going to play this game where you're going to stay in the game by running it and shortening the game. So it would have been nice to see that completion. But yeah, mm-hmm. I'm with you. I like this game, and I don't think it's crazy. They had a, and I know what everybody's saying. Okay, you know, yeah, you know, the run to the playoffs and everything. But I think what we're building toward is what ESPN had a segment today, Simon. And I know you're not privy to everything that ESPN does, but they had a segment saying, okay, give us your sleeper Super Bowl participant. And it had to be somebody that's, you know, if you say, look, the Ravens are going to make a run here at the end, like, you know, you're not coming off the mountain with the tablets, okay? If you say Kansas City's going to go to the Super Bowl, you're not educating anybody. The two teams that they kept mentioning were the Las Vegas Raiders and the Miami Dolphins. Now, what do you think that is? Because they have a quarterback playing essentially, you know, mistake-free football.
I think it's also Brian Flores. I mean, I think he's getting a lot of rep right now, or mm-hmm. you know, he's getting a good rep with everybody right now. And people are jumping on board that bandwagon.
And the defense is just fun to watch. It is.
Yeah.
I think as much as we all love Tua and as much as we hope he's going to be great, he is just a bit part of what's the bigger picture, you know, which is great coaching, which is outstanding defense, which is phenomenal special teams. You know, every week we all want to come on and go, he's amazing, he did this, but actually we've just got to rein it in a little bit, because there are so many other component parts as to why we're on a 5-game winning streak, as to why we're 6-3. It's no accident that we're 6-3. And you look at the schedule, you know, Denver potentially without Drew Lock, the Jets haven't won a game, the Bengals, you know, competitive but struggling a little bit. You win those three games, you're 9-3, and the next game is Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs coming to the stadium where they won the Super Bowl, you know, to face a 9-3 Miami Dolphins team who are going to be, you know, if they do win those three games, are going to be half a game behind the Buffalo Bills in a race to win the AFC East, potentially in really good position for one of those two wildcard spots. You know, Tua versus Mahomes, a lot of what they do really well as the Chiefs are also played to our strengths. You know, a lot of what we do well actually plays to their weaknesses. So, I mean, can you imagine? Is that not a shootout that you'd want to watch? Mahomes against Tagovailoa in the stadium where Pat won his
that Super game Bowl will have stadium. Some juice. And if there was ever a candidate for a game that if the Dolphins look, I'll go ahead and I'll call my shot here. Everybody was asking today, okay, you know, why do you care about press? Well, I care about press because I want to see this team play some national games. I want to see this team play on Sunday night. Do you know that they haven't played on Sunday night in 6 years, Simon?
Yeah,
6 years.
It's going to be tough to flex that game because it's Pittsburgh-Buffalo that night on Sunday Night Football. So,
I don't know. Dolphins are 9-3 going into that game.
If the Dolphins have won 9 of their last 10 games heading into that game, you know, facing the Super Bowl champs, I don't know. I'll take that as a draw over the Pittsburgh-Buffalo game.
But the point is that Pittsburgh Buffalo is already the Sunday night game. They're not going to flex out.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
They're not going to flex out the AFC leader and the unbeaten team in the NFL for, regardless of how good that game is, they're still not going to flex that out. But yeah. No, that's the point. I think it's a great, you know, Tua Mahomes. Who you know, people are going to tune in to watch Tua Mahomes over, you know, with the respect to Josh and to Ben over Roethlisberger and Allen. But I think that is the game that's already there. So.
Yeah, and the point that you raised about Tua, you know, being a part of a bigger, you know, a piece of a bigger picture right now, the point I try to drive home to people is that is not uncommon at all in the, you know, when you look at the careers of the greatest passers of all time. And, you know, I made this point on Twitter. This reminds me a lot because I guess I'm getting old enough to remember these seasons from 20 years ago and such, but I remember the season that Tom Brady had the first year he was a starter. Okay, he was a caretaker. They leaned on Antoine.
You think
Smith.
That makes you old? Then I'm essentially dead.
Well, yeah, I mean, hey, but I remember that season. I remember them leaning on a veteran defense, you know, a very tricky defense in New England, and playing safe with yeah. respect to Tom Brady. He was, you know, throwing 28 times a game, something like that. And Antoine Smith was hardly a headliner at running back, but they leaned on him. They leaned on the ground game, such as it was. I remember when Big Ben took over for Tommy Maddox. Tommy Maddox was a winner in Pittsburgh when Big Ben took over for him. And they only had Ben like throw 21, 22 passes a game. And this was the Bill Cowher Steelers. They were, you know, this was Jerome Bettis and Deuce Staley running the ball. This was the Steelers defense. And Ben rattled off like 13 straight wins to start his career.
Yeah.
And then he won a game in the playoffs too, before losing the playoffs, you know, these, and the other guy is, you know, go back to Russell Wilson's first year with the Seattle Seahawks. And actually this was a continuing narrative that happened for a number of years in Seattle with, how they weren't asking him to do too much in that offense. It was still the Marshawn Lynch, you know, rushing attack and defense and everything like that. I mean, this is very common for early in a Hall of Famer's career. Even the coaches know not to have these guys do too much. It's part of the formula. And I think that's what's happening right now. It doesn't mean that it was coincidental that the Steelers won 13 straight games with Big Ben, you know, in his first 13 starts. I mean, he had a lot to do with that, even though he played like more of a minor role because he was a rookie. He had a lot to do with that. He's going to the Hall of Fame. That's not a coincidence that they were that good. It's not a coincidence that the Seattle Seahawks were so good in Russell Wilson's first year, rookie year. It's not a coincidence that the New England Patriots won the Super Bowl in Tom Brady's first year, even though these guys had relatively minor roles compared to some of their later years where they were in high volume passing offenses and they're, you know, etching their names in NFL record books and stuff like that. So that's how you have to look at this season with Tua Tagovailoa. He is responsible for a lot of what's going on out there on the field, and his being so good is one of the reasons why we're winning, definitely. But at the same time, they're up by multiple scores in the second half and we're like, you know, hey, you're not passing the ball enough.
Yeah.
Well, that's part of it. They're not going to tempt fate with a guy that has this much, you know, youth and inexperience. So, as for this game, I thought it's funny because in the second half, they kind of dialed him down. They didn't have him do much. And in the first half though, aside from, you know, I'm not even going to nitpick him on that near miss to Jakeem Grant, because it was a pretty incredible, you know, start to that play. He was off by like, if you look at the back view of the play, he was off by like a foot, from making one of the highlight plays. It looked just like Patrick Mahomes to Tyreek Hill. If you look at it on all 22, it's just like, it's vintage. So he did miss that one, but the only other play in the first half that you could nitpick was he was half a beat late to Mike Gesicki when he threw to the right-hand side, and Gesicki had the ball, you know, a defender kind of arrived nearly at the same time. And people were like, yeah, I hit you in the hands. You should have caught it. And that's true. Mm-hmm. But the reason is because actually Tua hesitated for half a beat before he got the ball out. He patted the football. I'm not sure what he was seeing. Maybe he thought that Gesicki wasn't quite ready for it or something, but I mean, he was looking at it. It was there. Gesicki had his head around, but he something made him pat the football one extra time. And that was a bad play for him. But otherwise the first half was nearly flawless for Tua Tagovailoa. And as you say, they were on their way to like going up 21-0 mm-hmm. when you had that bad snap situation, and you know, obviously should have used Manscaped. But I think that you have to look at that and say, no, they're not asking much from him, but he is executing. Like he's executing at a really high level. And then the second half, he did have some issues on a couple of plays, some things that he would have had back, including that near interception. And there's another bad ball, I think, to Devontae Parker. But I think overall you're looking at his performance and you're like, they're not asking you to do like a terrible amount right now, but his execution of this, I mean, it was so much better than Justin Herbert's execution in this game. Mm-hmm. I mean, this game, it was, if you look at it really closely, it's not close. It was not close. So I think that, you know, you do have to be positive about him going forward, because down the line, we get into some really tough games. We are going to need him to take over. We are going to need him to pass the ball. I mean, you could argue he already had to do that in the Cardinals game.
Yeah, it already happened against the Cardinals.
So we are going to need that. And then you're going to go back to games like this where he was executing, even though, you know, executing very well, even though he wasn't asked to do much. And you say, well, that kind of showed you that he's able to do it, that he's able to dial it up more, that there's more meat on the bone. So I think that's what I come away with on this one. And, you know, I do look forward to those games, because for once I have the confidence that it's going to turn out well, which is kind of mind boggling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that play where, what did that play look like to you guys? And I'm pretty sure that I know what you're going to say. The play where it was a bad low snap from the shotgun and he goes to picks it up and then throws a high point ball to Devontae Parker. If that's not Russell Wilson, I don't know what that is.
Oh man, that was great. That was a great play.
I've seen Russell Wilson make that play, and pretty much, you know, Mahomes can make that play. But besides those two guys, like, who the hell has the presence of mind to do all of that?
Most impressive thing, it's not even the presence of mind, it's just the poise. Just the poise to be able to do that and not to panic, to know that, okay, you got it back in your hands, you still got time, you know where you know where Parker's going to be, because that was where you're going to go anyway. The poise to do that and not just fall on the ball. That I thought that's what was so impressive.
Yeah. All right, let's play our game, Simon. You want to go first with your guy, or you want us to shoot our guys?
I'll tell you what, why don't you tell me the years that you've both got your guys in, because I want to make sure that you don't have the same fuckers that I do.
Okay, my guy is a 1993.
Okay, that's fine. Chris?
Mine is much more recent. I actually have to look at, give me, drafted in 2005, but I just like where he ended up.
Wow.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Go on, Alf, you go first then.
All right, my guy is returner extraordinaire, Kirby Dardar. Mm. Do you know where he is?
Where are you, Kirby Dardar? No, is the answer.
Okay. Have you looked him up?
Do you know where he is?
No, that's why I'm asking.
Okay. Chris?
You're the one.
Nobody's bothered to look him up?
Chris, go on, give us your guy.
Okay, my guy was drafted in 2005. You may actually remember him. He's a tackle named Anthony Alabi, and he was from TCU. But the reason I chose him is because of where he ended up, and where, I mean, the most recent place that I saw him anyway, is he is an actor. Like he's now a working actor, and he's been in like a lot of stuff, actually, as you look down his list. But where I saw him was he was like a fabulous hairdresser in Pee Wee's Big Holiday, the 2016 reboot of Pee Wee Herman. And he showed up with like a group of like traveling hairdressers with like this massive wig on. And he was, you know, he's very, very effeminate. I thought it was hilarious. It was a great role. But that's Anthony Alabi, former tackle of the Miami Dolphins.
I know where Kirby Dardar is.
So do I. He's a community activist.
A Canadian activist?
A community activist.
Oh, okay.
Yes, but before then, he was coach. A
Canadian activist.
But before then,
he was coach back in 2006.
Yeah, he was coach of the Syracuse Soldiers of the American Indoor Football Association. His team went 1-10, yeah. And then the league ceased operations after the season. It doesn't seem like he coached anywhere else, did he?
Nah.
So, yeah, he didn't coach anywhere else, but he played for the Dolphins for 3 years, played for the Chiefs for one, and for the New York, New Jersey Hitmen. Great uniforms. One of the best all-time uniforms of all time. Go look up that XFL uniform, the New York, New Jersey Hitmen. He played for them for 1 year. So,
right. You ready for these?
Hit it.
The second best is a guy who was undrafted, I think. Yeah, undrafted. I don't know where he is now. Out of Michigan State, defensive back, 6'3", 208 pounds, 1991 season. Mike Iaquiniello.
Huh.
Remember him?
I think I have a feeling you are butchering the hell out of the name right now.
What year is this?
He played 15 games. Didn't start any, but played in 15 games in 1991.
Wow.
Iaquiniello.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Wow. But he's not even the best. Okay. So you're ready for the best? Because this, I mean, I'd never heard of this guy, and I thought I knew a lot about the Miami Dolphins. Okay, this is the season before, the 1990 season. He played defensive back alongside J.B. Brown, Kerry Glenn, Liffert Hobley, Paul Lankford, Tim McKiah, Lewis Oliver, Jarvis Williams, Michael Magruder. This is from the University of Illinois, African Grant. African Grant. What is his middle name? Think about his first name. Think about his first name, and then think about what his middle name might be.
Oh, American?
No.
African-American?
Nigeria.
Oh, African-Nigerian Grant. Nigeria Grant. Right?
Wow. He played four games in the 1990 season, wore number 41. I don't know where he is. His daughter plays, plays for the Penn State women's volleyball team. He is African Grant, was a Miami Dolphins player for four games in 1990. Beat that.
That's a pretty great name. Although I'm sending you a picture of Anthony Alabi in the Pee Wee movie. And I'm just saying.
Garrett Limbrick. Do you remember him? This is probably not great content for the listeners.
I could always cut all this shit.
Yeah, we could just go on for like an hour and make you listen to it.
Yes. No, I'll just keep the first few.
As long as African Grant. I don't care.
Remember Andre Brown?
Yeah. The receiver.
Yes.
We drafted a guy named Tim Pigeon.
We did. He never really took off.
Remember when we had that tight end?
And on that note,
you can leave that in though. Yeah. I'm even clapping myself. That was so good.
All right, people. I think we can move on right there. All right, we gave you a lot. We gave you a lot of nonsense. We gave you a lot of Tua Tagovailoa analysis. We even talked some Justin Herbert today. Okay, the next time you hear from us, we will talk Broncos, Dolphins in Denver. Bad weather expected, by the way. That's the early line, all right? So, see you then.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.